This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the war in Ukraine, or what Vladimir Putin calls his special military operation, continues. And this week, the Chinese leader, President Xi Jinping, spent 3 days in Moscow, clearly aligning himself beside Putin. And in the course of their conversations, we didn't learn about the behind closed doors conversations, but we did learn there was an interesting comment from President Xi that the winds were blowing east and west. They were blowing in favor of the authoritarian states and that they would prevail. This, of course, is a reference not just to Russia, but also to Iran, to Saudi Arabia, and perhaps India. Countries that don't basically subscribe to our Western democracies and our way of life. And it was interesting for many reasons, but one of them is the possibility that the next American president, who will be voted into office next year in 2024, may not share the view of the Biden administration and may not be as effective a leader of the Western alliance as Joe Biden has been. And we're joined now by Niall Stanage, who is our guest every week from Washington, where he is associate editor of The Hill, a very good newspaper, and also White House columnist for The Hill. It's a pleasure to have Niall on always. Niall, the background I gave there, rather windy and long introduction, is done to sort of make the point. I read something that the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, who is expected to be Trump's main rival for the Republican nomination and probably to be the winner or possibly to be the winner, he said recently, effectively, that this business in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia, was a territorial dispute. It had nothing to do with America's interests. And that would ring alarm bells in anybody's head in Europe. And of course, Donald Trump also was on the road to isolationism. And many of us, when we think about what's happening in Ukraine now, feel very happy and relieved that Donald Trump is not the president. The question I want to ask you first, Niall, is about your perception of Biden's performance in galvanizing NATO, the European Union, and visiting Kiev, and also supplying a lot of money, a lot of arms, and in a sense, leading a Western alliance that Putin and Xi may have thought was weak and divided.
I think, being as objective as possible, Biden has clearly done well as a diplomat or as a statesman in that respect. It's pretty clear that he has been able to galvanize that coalition and to hold it together. It seems that what Vladimir Putin was anticipating was that even if there were early unity against his invasion of Ukraine, that that unity would crumble. It hasn't done. Biden has maintained the unity of the West and a very high cadence of support from the United States, for the Ukrainians and has cast the conflict as a really crucial one. Now, the other side of that is within the United States, what had been quite a high level of bipartisan support has certainly begun to erode. The comments that you mentioned from Ron DeSantis are maybe the clearest example of that. He described it as a territorial dispute and said that America had no vital interests at stake in the war in Ukraine. That means, apart from anything else, that the two likely contenders, likely leading contenders for the Republican nomination, will both be in a sort of quasi-isolationist or semi-isolationist position. Of course, Donald Trump is already an official candidate. Ron DeSantis expected to become one quite soon, but both singing from quite a similar hymn sheet when it comes to the war in Ukraine.
Yes, and as you say, it's a semi-isolationist, not fully. However, what is really interesting, and I'm sure our listeners, I certainly would be interested to know, is who reflects best the mood of the American people, Joe Biden or the two Republicans most likely to contest the race in 2024? For the White House, of course.
The challenge in answering a question like that, which is, of course, a very good question, is the extent to which we can talk about the American people as a useful phrase, because so much has begun to break down along partisan lines. So Democrats are broadly supportive of, well, certainly of Ukraine in its fight against Russia and of American involvement to help the Ukrainians. Republicans are much more split. There, if you look at opinion polling, for example, there has been a very clear, precipitous rise in the number of Republicans who are skeptical of the amount of aid the United States is giving to Ukraine, are skeptical of how the war might end. And so that early bipartisanship is beginning to break down. Now, we don't want to oversimplify that picture in that, for example, when DeSantis made those remarks, sort of belittling the conflict as a territorial dispute, he did get criticized by some Republicans. Marco Rubio, a senator from Florida, for example, was critical of him. So you do have the remnants of the old-style Republican Party, which was hawkish on matters of defense and national security, versus the DeSantis Trump wing, which is more isolationist at least. And when you're looking ahead to 2024, you're looking at Trump and likely DeSantis leading the field. And that's what I think causes such concern among proponents of support for Ukraine.
Is it likely, do you think, Niall, that the conflict in Ukraine, if it is still active, and in the light of what President Xi had to say, and obviously with Putin's consent, about the world changing and the wind blowing in favor, not of the West, but of the West's enemies, this indicates, for one thing, that this is a long-term view which China is taking. It will, of course, it matters for the Taiwanese people, for example. And is it likely that that in itself could be one of the major issues in an American presidential election? Or is that foolish to believe that?
It's not foolish to believe it. It is one of the big issues in, I would say, American political discussion, but at maybe a somewhat, I don't normally like the word elite level, but at the sort of Washington set, that would be a very genuine and germane issue. And Biden himself has spoken a number of times about the idea that he feels one of the defining issues of his time as president is his desire to prove that democracies work. You know, the kind of view that you have rightly ascribed to President Xi, for example, is really about the Chinese view that democracies are fading, because they get into log jams. There isn't enough consensus. There's too much division.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And the idea then is they become ineffective. Democracies become ineffective at rising to the challenges that face them. That is something that Biden's trying to push back against with limited success. Now, when it comes to the presidential election, I think it tends to be fought on more populist grounds, in the sense of, is Biden weak enough, or it's too weak or too strong with China, as well as, of course, all the domestic concerns.
It's the economy, stupid. I think that was Bill Clinton's way of reducing it to its essentials. Just to move on to Trump, he has had troubles recently. Documents in Mar-a-Lago, the feds are after him for that. There's a case in New York involving Stormy Daniels, who is a woman who was a star in the porn industry, who he allegedly paid $130,000 hush money through his former solicitor, Michael Cohen. Cohen served 3 years in prison, actually, for something to do with Trump. But now this case has been taken up by the Attorney General in New York. And there is, Trump announced last weekend that he expected to be indicted last Tuesday. Now, we are talking on Thursday morning. He hasn't been indicted yet, but the police are on alert for trouble. And it seemed that Trump was inviting people to come and cause trouble as a way of defending him.
Yeah, I mean, he called for protests were he to be indicted. And this is a huge story. It will become an even bigger one if the grand jury does indict Trump. In other words, say that he has to face charges, because in that situation, I mean, presumably he will surrender himself to authorities. But he would still need to be fingerprinted and photographed, and
yes,
those photographs are likely to become public, and that'll be, you know, an enormous deal. He, of course, is casting this prosecution by the district attorney in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, who's a Democrat, as a political witch hunt. I would say, Eamon, and I don't know how much you want to get into the detail of this case, but, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast regularly would certainly know we're not in the business of carrying water for the Donald.
No.
But in my view, this particular case against him, if it proceeds to charges, is terribly weak, I think, to pursue a former president of the United States. And we'll see. I mean, maybe they have evidence that is not public yet, but it is a rather thin case on which to hang what would be, by its very nature, a historic prosecution.
Yes, and it may happen later on today, so it may overtake this podcast. And that's an interesting view that you've expressed there now, because some of the other troubles he has most certainly are serious.
Absolutely.
And the one that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, is pursuing about the secret document, top secret documents that Trump had in Mar-a-Lago, which is where he lives, and that he took from the White House, that he repeatedly lied about in terms of saying he'd given them all up. And in the end, the FBI famously last summer had to raid Mar-a-Lago to get more and found more, but they didn't find them all. This surely is a more serious matter, although I understand Merrick Garland has been subject to some criticism for not being rigorous enough in his pursuit of Trump. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. He's certainly been criticized from people of a, you know, more liberal or left-wing or anti-Trump position. Merrick Garland temperamentally is a very, although he is ideologically left-leaning, he's temperamentally, you know, conservative with a small c, very much by the book, and a rather sort of vanilla kind of character. And honestly,
we should say, for their audience who don't know, he was the man that Barack Obama, when he was president, sought to appoint to the Supreme Court mm-hmm. in the February, that's 10 months before Obama left office, but the Republicans blocked it all the way, mm-hmm. and he never got appointed. That's worth noting, isn't it?
It is, as is the fact that Republicans at that time justified it on the basis that an outgoing president shouldn't be able to do that, and then completely reversed yes. themselves in the final months of the Trump presidency. When he nominated Amy Coney Barrett, a very conservative yes. woman, to the Supreme Court, and she was successfully confirmed to the court. But just to briefly sort of circle back to your point about the Mar-a-Lago investigation, Eamon, without going through every chapter and verse of that, that on its face seems to me A, more serious, and B, a much better founded case against Trump, because as you've already alluded to, it seems quite blatant that not only did he keep possession of these documents, but that he or someone very close to him lied during the process by which the authorities were seeking to take possession of those documents. The Trump side, in essence, saying, we've given you everything, when they very clearly had not.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now, there's another court case, again, very serious, one would have thought. It involves Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, and it is about the behaviour of Fox News on the question of, first of all, the election results, secondly, January the 6th and their reporting of January the 6th. And Rupert Murdoch is, in fact, well, you can tell us the details, but Fox News are in the dock and they are being sued by a company that makes election machines, Dominion.
Correct.
And they're being sued for libel. For $1.6 billion is the defamation suit that Dominion are pursuing, and pursuing with vigor and with apparent success, because Murdoch has had to make some, and his people have had to make some extraordinary concessions in terms of what they were doing to push this crazy stolen election agenda.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is a really fascinating case, not least because, as you would know and many of our listeners will know, it's a lot more difficult to win a defamation case in the United States than it is in yes. Ireland or Britain, not least because you generally have to, as a plaintiff, prove, and the phrase is, actual malice on the part of a journalist, a print journalist or a broadcaster, in making false claims. The fascinating thing about this case that Dominion has taken against Fox is that in seeking to prove that actual malice, they have got through disclosure lots of emails and texts that Fox executives and sometimes Fox personalities sent among themselves. And in many cases, those appear to be quite clear that Fox was pushing on air things that producers or so-called talent knew to be untrue. And people were being put on Fox as representatives of Trump, who people behind the scenes felt were crazy. But it was being done seemingly, I mean, of course, Fox would deny this, but it was seemingly being done to shore up the ratings by telling the Fox audience what it wanted to know, rather than by doing anything that would pass as for journalism as most people understand it.
Yes, and there's evidence, and Rupert Murdoch has testified to this effect, there's evidence that Fox discovered when they laid off that story of a stolen election and Trump having been brought down by stealth, people were leaving the network. And Rupert Murdoch has testified to this effect and effectively said, we did it for money, we did it for audiences. And he has said this in his deposition to the court. And he says, and I quote, that Fox News hosts endorsed the lie of a stolen election. And it's extraordinary. These people, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, these are all big Fox stars. But it was a ratings war, and they threw in as bait the idea that the American election had been stolen.
Yeah, I mean, in one instance, Tucker Carlson, who's perhaps the single most pro-Trump commentator on air, was caught through this disclosure process saying of Trump privately, I hate him passionately, while giving the completely opposite impression by anyone who tuned in to his show. There was another instance where Sean Hannity, who you mentioned there, had seen on the Fox airwaves one of the legitimate reporters for Fox, and they do have legitimate reporters, we've always tried to point that out here, a legitimate journalist at Fox on air had fact-checked some of the wilder claims coming from the Trump side and pointed out that they were false, to which Hannity reacted privately with fury and was messaging people talking about how this female reporter who had fact-checked these crazy claims had done, and this is the quote, irreparable harm to the brand. To the brand of Fox News, that is, really showing no apparent regard for the truth of anything, very much, but rather the paramount importance or paramount interest in shoring up the audience and making sure that those viewers did not flee from Fox, as they were doing at the time, to even more right-wing networks, One America News and Newsmax being the obvious examples. So a really fascinating case in the way it has shone a spotlight into the inner workings of Fox News and the broader workings of some of the conservative media in America.
Yes, and I mean, not only were they damaging, if you like, the American democratic tradition, they were also seriously damaging Dominion, the company who they were arguing had rigged the 2020 election by manipulating vote tallies. And it looks from the reporting that Fox News will lose. But what I suppose is more serious is what you referred to a moment ago, Niall, which is the idea that in order to make money effectively, Fox would be prepared to lie to its audience on that scale for that amount of time, like every day, all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it clearly has been a very damaging lawsuit to Fox News, irrespective of what the result is. Now, you're right, and most legal experts think that this is as good a case as you would get in the United States for a company claiming defamation. As I say, that is normally a difficult case to make because of the protections afforded by the First Amendment and all of that. But it is something that has, I think that the central point is that it has exposed in a very clear-cut way the idea that it is not just that Fox is a conservative or right-leaning or even Trump-supporting network. It's the idea that they are knowingly deceiving an audience to to keep that audience's attention and loyalty. And I think that's where the reputational damage is at its most severe.
Now, here's arguably where it gets very serious. When people start campaigning in 2024, and that won't be long now before the primaries begin and all of that, this nation, the most powerful nation in the world, the sort of, I won't say the beacon for the West, but certainly the foundation of any Western defense of its values, this kind of thing is happening. It appears to be an attack on the fabric of the democracy upon which all of us depend, if we're not to end up with Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and a few other gents that I could think of in Iran and Saudi Arabia. So this is critical. We're at a critical moment, are we not? Tell me I'm mad. If the next American election is going to be decided by these outlets and their money like them, we're in trouble.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that's true. And I think you actually beat me to the punch, so to speak, in linking this to what we were talking about earlier with Xi Jinping and China and Russia and all of that. The polarization in American society, of course, has lots of different causes, but it has clearly been amplified and deepened by some traditional media outlets like Fox and some social media dynamics, all of that. That has sort of hollowed out the center in American life, not only in the sense of people holding different views, different opinions, but people simply not accepting facts, really. And therein lies the problem, because you have to have a commonly agreed set of facts, and then you can have the ideological argument around them. If you believe that, you know, the election was rigged, which is still a belief held by about one third of the population here, about the 2020 election, clearly that damages democracy itself. It's not only about saying, well, Joe Biden has less moral authority, or it's more difficult for him to get laws through. Those things are true, but the bigger problem is it means that one third of the American population, approximately, has no faith in American democracy. That's clearly a major, major problem for the legitimacy of elections and for the whole working of the society.
And arguably for the survival of the West in any future confrontation. There's just a final point I'd like to make to you, Niall, about Mitch McConnell, who was the majority leader in the Senate when the Republicans were in control of the Senate before the midterms, and Rupert Murdoch, have expressed contempt for Trump. And Mitch McConnell is known to, I think, to detest him. And Murdoch, when they had to make that call on election night, I think it was about Arkansas.
Arizona.
When it was put to Murdoch, should they do it and offend Trump, Murdoch said, fuck him. Well, he did.
Not exactly in those words, but anyway, go ahead.
Actually, he did say it in those words.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, okay, he said, apologies. Do it. Well, they went. The Fox were the first, as you know, the first channel to make the call. And when they rang him up to see if it was okay, that's what he said. Now, my point is this. Two very, very powerful men, Rupert Murdoch, Mitch McConnell, leader of the Senate, majority leader of the Senate, and the biggest publisher and indeed broadcast mogul in the United States, hating this fellow, but having to bend the knee quite a lot to keep their listeners and viewers and voters happy. This is what our democracy has become.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that the objection that McConnell and Murdoch both have to Trump is not only a sort of dislike of his bragging and belligerent personality, but a belief that the conservative policies or things that they would like to push and that they believe in are sort of undermined by Trump's authoritarianism and also his sort of self-defeating chaos and craziness that he always brings in his wake. The problem is that that more traditional or sober-minded version of conservatism doesn't have a hold over the voters. It is or the viewers, for that matter. It is Trump who still has the hold over the voters and the viewers, and therein is the crux of the issue.
Politics as a game show. Okay, Niall, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. That's Niall Stanich. Niall is associate editor of the Hill newspaper and White House columnist for that paper. We're grateful to Niall, as always, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. Apologies for the F-bomb, but there's no other way to put it, I'm afraid. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.